The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
What were you saying about the horse?
How cool would it be?
Okay, so we get a horse, a disco horse, and we do what with it?
Well, then we need a disco.
Then we need a disco. Okay. Well,
And then a disco light.
Uh-huh. And a fog machine.
Me and him can... fog machine's a bullshit. Me and him can DJ. Like, he can do the mod stuff. I'll do the retro shit.
Okay.
And we're going to fucking have a disco with a horse in the middle of it that you bounce lights off, man. And you got... What you do is you make your lights moving.
Uh-huh.
So back in the day when you couldn't have your lights moving, I used to send oaks up there to manually... Because they could swivel.
Yes.
But I want them then to be in a different position, because if they're just swiveling, then it becomes repetitious.
Uh-huh.
I used to send oaks up there to move the lights every 20 minutes.
Okay, so I'm not against the idea, right? I'm not against the glitter horse. I just have one question.
Mm.
What do we do if in the middle of our disco, someone decides to just hop on and ride the glitter horse?
I know, so that's why it's probably a one-off. In other words, don't sign a long lease.
Don't sign a long lease. Okay, we are hosting one disco party because we probably won't get to a second.
Correct.
Okay, I'm on board for that. I can get behind that. Okay, let's get the show on the road. Let's get the show started.
Let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unfiltered. 98 are currently collapsing.
Privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
Ken, there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Hey, introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Munaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Hello and welcome back to Insider Exchange. We have missed you, and because we've missed you so much, we thought we had to come back. The Insider community has been without us for quite some time because of some logistical challenges, but it has allowed us to make a couple of adjustments. It has allowed us to rethink just how much we can bring to the communities and just what we can do. Si and I have been away for the last couple of weeks traveling between different places, and we'll give you an update around those travels as well, but we're going to get into a couple of new things, so stick with us. We're going to put them all together and see if we can keep them all in one place, but there is so much to get into because for the last 3 weeks it has been absolutely manic. So we're going to kick things off with something new, and it is something that we will probably keep going forward. It's what we can see, or what we think we can get into as much information as possible, a rapid fire update session that we're going to do. We've got a very specific method for that. We've got a very specific formula here. We have a timer, 5 minutes, Si. That's cool. All the time you and I have. Today we have five different things to get into, so it averages out to 60 seconds per conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be using the 5 minutes to get into the rates predictions that you and I gave whilst we were traveling.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get into the top 40.
Mm-hmm. Earnings is back, De Beers, Botswana government, and Tupperware.
That's it. Those are the five things we're going to get into. I'm going to hit start on the timer. We can go in any particular order here, but we only have 5 minutes. And if we use more of time on one than the other, then we have a problem. Right. So I think we start with the easiest ones first because, you know, get it out, bank some
time.
Is
that Tupperware?
Okay. I'm going to hit start on the timer and then we're going to get into it. Right. 3, 2, 1, go.
So Tupperware being back is moot because there's way better stuff. There's Joseph and Joseph, there's Mapal, I don't know what they all called, but we've got stuff at home which makes Tupperware look old school.
That's what I thought. But you try telling that to South Africans, that Tupperware is back. It's under a new name, granted, right?
I would not tell that to my granny. No,
exactly. You see. So it's under a new name, Tup Africa. Oh. And it is, interestingly enough, I didn't know this. Tupperware, well, I did know this at some point. Tupperware originally was a, or not was, is a US-based company. Mm. So I wonder, in the context of perhaps some of the other conversations that we get into, if we go into a full-blown trade war, do we ban the importation of Tupperware?
Well, yeah, because their website is still in maintenance mode, so.
Yeah, so Tupperware back in South Africa, folks. For those that are wondering, they made an official announcement. The head of their African division has made that announcement, but we're out of time on that because that was a full minute.
Mm-hmm.
Next one.
De Beers and Botswana government. I thought Angola and I wanted to buy some.
Yeah, but
everyone wants diamonds.
Everybody wants diamonds. But we spoke about this, and yes, we were looking for suitors, and we went through a list of potential suitors to say, does the Oppenheimer family come back and buy it off? Mm-hmm. Does the Botswanan government come in? The Botswanan government came out very clearly to say they are looking to go down this road and earnestly.
And we said they should buy
road.
Jumping Jack or whatever their clothing
right.
brand was.
Right. We had a couple of other options of where they could deploy the money, but they're going through to as far as discussing this with the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Oman to finance the deal and all of that. So they want a majority stake, and that decision, according to the president of Botswana, was set to take place this week. So in this week, they were set to make an offer for that and to see whether or not they'll go ahead with it. Now, I don't know if that's going to make sense for them, but they're moving ahead.
Look, they've hitched their horses, something, their desert to diamonds. I mean, I'm not sure about it, but maybe we should make an offer.
Maybe we should make an offer. Okay.
$100.
$100 for the entire De Beers business. That's all the time we have for that one. Earnings season back in the US, not really.
Dude,
it feels like we just came out of an earnings season.
So Trump said, there's very little me and Trump agree with, but he did say a little while ago that they should only be reporting twice a year. Now, I'm not convinced. I would like it. I mean, truthfully, market used to it. Market likes it. But I mean, this quarterly stuff is hard. I mean, we do it every 6 months in the JSC, and that's quite nice. Like, it gives you a holiday.
Interims, full years.
Just quarterly.
But while we're looking at earnings season, I thought it would be interesting to say that we're going to keep an eye on Starbucks because we've called that, and because, well, pumpkin spice latte season has started. Yes, I'm having a pumpkin spice latte.
Do you have a pumpkin spice latte?
Yes. It's very cinnamony and very much the pumpkin spice flavor. So I was surprised, right? And this was what shocked me about this was typically we get it 2 or 3 weeks later after when it launches in America. We got pumpkin spice latte season here right on cue, hey?
Jen, I haven't even had my birthday yet. And to be clear, I'm an October kid. Best kids in October. And to be very, very clear, I saw Christmas stuff in a shop. When I was a little young, Christmas stuff before my birthday brought tears. This time it almost brought tears. My birthday is a month and a day away.
Okay, what doesn't bring you tears, Si, is the next topic in our rapid fire. The JSE hitting 100,000 points on the top 40. Not the JSE all share, the top 40.
The top 40.
Yes.
So, I mean, the only data I have, so I went back when the Satrix launched the first ETF in South Africa, 27 November 2000 at 7 Rand 70. Compounded annual growth rate, and I'm doing the math in my head, so it might be a light, 11%. Add 2.5% dividends. 13.5% over 25 years in ZAR. Not shabby. When inflation probably averaged 5%, you got 8.5% real return. This is insane. Loving it because I own the ETF.
And you won the bets. Tell me about the bets quickly.
Oh, two bets. One was that we would hit 100K by the end of September. The other was we'd hit 100K by the end of the year. Boom, boom. I got whiskey for the weekend.
Yes.
Because I don't know. Some bets are easy. Also, when you make two of them, you kind of lay each other off each other. And
you're guaranteed one bottle.
I won both.
There we go. We have 44 seconds to look at the rate predictions, the rate cuts that we had discussed when I was away. I had said 25 basis points in the case of the US and no cut in the case of South Africa.
You were right. I was wrong. I think I'd said 25 in the US and I wanted to say 50. And then I said 25 locally because I thought that maybe
I said I didn't want to be right.
Yeah,
I said I didn't want to be right.
Our MPC is out of cut.
They
Can
are.
We say that?
And
is that a
well,
bad word?
Let us know if that's a bad word, folks. Si wants to know. I'm not sure. But for rapid fire, we have run out of time. That's the time, and we have 2 seconds left.
Go top 40.
Yes. Look at that. See, beat the buzzer.
The deep dive. We are keeping our deep dive because this segment allows us to get into some really interesting conversations with some really interesting guests. But this week's deep dive, we are looking at the new trades deal. And I say new because we don't know how many iterations of this we've got. It's one of those Word documents or PDF documents that has a version 5.5.7, final.
I got a manuscript delivered the other day for me to read, and it's version 18. I'm like, yo.
There we go. See what I mean? So this particularly relates to South Africa South Africa and the United States. Mm-hmm. And the president this morning in his presidential newsletter, which is, I think, is titled From the Desk of the President. The presidential newsletter spoke of the fact that things are progressing exceptionally well between our trade relations or our efforts to restore trade relations with the United States, and that things are moving in the right direction there. But what we did also get over the weekend was the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, the DTIC, that has been dealing with the trade side of things, mm-hmm. has said that there is a new proposal from the United States on how they want the trade relationship to look like between South Africa. So, backstory. The United States wasn't happy with trade. I say the United States, but we know we all mean Orange Mussolini. Mm-hmm. Was not happy with the trade relations from everywhere around the world, and will park the conversation about the fact that U.S. judges or the U.S. courts have now ruled that some of the tariffs need to be reversed and all of those things. Separate conversation, not there. But the United States wasn't happy. We proposed a counter to this. The mm-hmm. United States blue ticked us on that. Mm-hmm. We then have gotten a response from the United States around what they are potentially looking at. Now, I don't know if this response came before or after a second proposal from our side, mm-hmm. and what's been happening there. Nevertheless, we are going to see if we can make sense of where we stand on trade at the moment, right? I found something quite interesting, Si, and I thought perhaps we could look at this in the context of whether or not these deals or these conversations should be kept as secretive. Because for the most part, we know that something is being proposed to the United States. We don't know what is being proposed to the United States. We also don't know what the ramifications of that will be on the South African economy, on the mm-hmm. We don't have any line of sight as citizens, as lawmakers, as anyone in the country, other than perhaps a couple of members in the DTIC, the presidency, and maybe some parliamentarians. I don't even think all of cabinet knows what's being proposed. And that sparked something for me that made me worry. And it only made me worry because I had a look at some of the other things that were proposed in the past. So the United States has previously proposed a couple of deals on the African continent with different countries, the likes of Uganda, the likes of Egypt, where both of those countries, as early as this year, have rejected the United States' deals. I think Nigeria was the other one as well, where the deals have been rejected on the basis that they are very clearly skewed towards the United States being able to take control over assets. And countries like Uganda have come out to say, we're not going to, our sovereignty is not up for sale. Countries like Egypt have come out to say the same thing. Our sovereignty is not up for sale because of the nature of the deals. And that got me wondering, should we not have line of sight or at least some consultation as South Africans as to what our government is selling or offering to a trade partner the size of the US?
So, I mean, I have thoughts on it. And I mean, the first is, there's a lot that happens at government that we are unaware of. I remember once when Julius Malema went to Parliament, we were upset because we had a secret satellite. And I'm like, dude, which part of secret don't you understand? But stuff happens. We had a nuclear program in the 80s, which we didn't know about until we deconstructed them. To my sense, from a pure negotiating technique, you don't make it public unless that gets you something. In other words, if there could be if you and I were negotiating about something and I let stuff public because it would make the public love me and hate you, mm-hmm. then I would use it because it's on my side. That's not going to change stuff. So
I agree with that around the fact that.
But should we as a country know what's in the proposal?
Because if we are...
I mean, the answer is yes, except, of course, we don't know. I mean, the US is like that, like quite sensitive about stuff.
So, Si, I agree very much with your point around the fact that we definitely do need to maintain some element of discretion, and whether it's secrecy, privacy, or whatever, when it comes to these negotiations, for the sake of maintaining some leverage, maintaining some positional powers, or even just maintaining discretion. Mm-hmm. No doubts there, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at, and this is why I brought it up, if you look at the pattern of what has been offered to other nations what has been extracted from Africa in the past in the form of our resources. I mean, we hear conversations of
the continent's been plundered. I mean,
and we hear conversations now, even from the president's desk, of offering rare earth minerals and those things that we are strategically well endowed with as a country to the United States. Fine. Nothing wrong with that, again. But what are we getting in return? Are we still just selling our resources for the sake of maintaining a relationship, or are we getting the short end of the stick? And that's part of what we don't know, right? Because of this is where I say, where do we draw the line between discretion and strategic negotiation and just getting the short end of the deal, whereas we could be negotiating better?
Yeah, because also, I mean, Trump probably wants something on the
we know he'd want something ridiculous.
On the BEE, on the expropriation.
Or just say, in one of the allegations across some of the other countries, it was I believe it might have been, is it Nigeria or is it Egypt? They wanted control of more than 50% of the petroleum assets or the oil-related assets, and control of more than 50% to be handed over to US-based companies.
Hey.
So you see what I mean, Si? This is my question, is where do we strike that balance?
And let's be clear. I mean, I don't even know what tariff. Are we at 30%?
30.
We're at 30, right. So we're in a very bad place. And we used to have a goer, which was like, you know, actually gave us some really good favorable treatment. 30% is insane. Any deal, even if we got a deal that gave us 20%, to be clear, that's a bad deal because 20% is ridiculous, and that orange man should go and sit in a box for the next 3.5 years.
Realistically, we know we're not going to get a deal that suits us more than it suits Trump. He'd never allow that. Fine. But how do
we... Well, except that what suits Trump. I mean, if we slipped him a couple of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
What if
we
buy his couple of his Trump coins?
Or a couple of those golden visas that he wants.
Yeah. I mean, we can slip him stuff. I mean, Trump is malleable. Slip him on the side there. Hey, Mr. Trump, here's some...
He sounds very much like he should be an African politician. How do we find that balance, Si? How do we balance the fact that it is national interests? And do we have enough trust in our leadership to be able to say, fine, go negotiate blindly. We trust that you're going to negotiate in our best interests. History has shown us otherwise, has it not? If we look at the pattern of, we've gotten, like you said, we've gotten a goer. Those are good things that we've gotten out of it. Mm. But history has also shown that individuals left to their own devices to negotiate things, Trump, case in point, has negotiated things that benefit the Trump family.
Yeah.
Do we have enough confidence in our leadership to say,
no, I mean,
we don't want to know?
I mean, short answer is no, surely. I mean, do we have confidence in our leadership? No, I mean, I present you 1% GDP for the last 15 years. So the answer to that is no. Should our leadership be more open with us as a principled rule? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, why don't you know? And maybe it is, you know, maybe it's coming more pressure from the American side, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a lack of openness on something which matters to us as a country. And that is not what you expect. When you're building nuclear bombs, we can debate whether that's good or bad, but it's a different story, perhaps. When you've got secret spy satellites, well, I just assume that everyone had them except you and me, but everyone else.
Yeah, we can't afford them yet.
Well, just if I did, I wouldn't tell you. Yeah, would I? But this is something that I think could be happening more in the open.
Mm. Mm. And again, if we then do have it out in the open, how do we balance what we've said around the fact that discretion does need to be maintained. Not everything needs to be spoken about, but, and I mean, I've put out a request as well from a radio side of it. So we will have some updates, I hope, to the DTIC to come and have this exact conversation around the fact that what information should be disclosed to the public around matters that are going to materially affect them. We know we're a mining rich country.
Yeah.
We know that we have the resources and the minerals. We have been having these conversations, at least even at a presidential level, about beneficiation and not being allowed or not allowing Africa to be plundered anymore, right? And these sorts of deals are those deals. These sorts of deals fundamentally shape your relationship with a country for at least this presidential term, so for at least the next 4 or 5 years, potentially going into a new presidential term as well. You saw it with Botswana coming out and saying to De Beers, or Botswana coming out and saying to Anglo, quite frankly, we want more than the 10% royalties you'd been giving us for all of these years as well. So that was an example of a country saying we're going to put the needs of the country ahead of the needs of the private capital, right? From a South African perspective and from a US-South Africa trade deal perspective, we're not going to get another chance to negotiate. Should we be having all hands on deck?
1,209 days, then we can.
Well, how is it still above 1,200? Haven't we been away for like weeks? What's going on?
Because a year is 365, he gets 4 years. So it's like, starts at like 1,400 and 1,500. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
It's a lot of days.
Oh, gosh. It's a lot of days. So again, in those lots of days, are we supposed to just sit here and anticipate that those that are negotiating this are negotiating it in our best interests?
Well, in theory, yes.
Okay.
In practice, I have questions.
We all have questions and hopefully we can get some answers. That's where we're going to have to leave the deep dive this week, though. In our collaborators' corner this week, we are taking a look at the world of trading. I share some of my thoughts and insights around that. Our collaborating partner for this particular conversation is Xness. Let's take a look at the conversation. Trading and see the potential that it is in its purest form. A skill set that can never be taken away from you.
It can give you a level of freedom, and I don't mean financial freedom. You can reduce the dependencies you have on others for your livelihood. As a broker, you know, we have such a large responsibility because people are coming to us to achieve goals, build a career, or improve their opportunities, and it's actually a blessing.
We are the ambition. Chase. The risk. The boldness. We are on the edge. Fighting back. We are in control. We are free. We are traders. Xness, born to trade.
You can, in a country like South Africa, where youth unemployment is sitting at 60%, 60, and I'm still a member of the South African youth population, to be able to sit there and say, how do I make my situation better? How do I make my generation's situation better? Because the opportunities are not coming out of nowhere. So we have to almost create those opportunities for ourselves to sit there and see trading and see the potential that it is. Its absolute potential in its purest form, not to see it as a quick thing or a quick fix or this, the absolute potential of what we spoke about in our first episode when I said a skill set that can never be taken away from you. That for me was the pivotal moment when I realized that that's what you could do with it. And we built the academy that we spoke about as well. And we built that out so that others in the country and in the world that don't have the skill set, that might not have had the educational opportunities can suddenly acquire something that can fundamentally change their lives, their families' lives, and their communities' lives around them. That is the true power of trading in its essence. That is the true power of participating in the financial markets. It's not this window-dressed thing that it's made out to be, that you can make a quick buck, that you can do this, you can do that. This is a skill set that can fundamentally change the lives of people for generations.
Fully agree. Well said. I mean, the way I see it is, it can give you a level of freedom, and I don't mean financial freedom. You can reduce the dependencies you have on others for your livelihood. I just need an internet connection and a phone or a tablet, and I can make a living. And even coming from a brokerage perspective, some people ask me, you know, what are you doing? And I think as a broker, you know, we have such a large responsibility because people are coming to us for dependency because they want to achieve goals and obviously build a career or improve their opportunities. And it's actually a blessing. And I don't feel that necessarily all brokerages take that responsibly.
It is taken for granted, not just from a brokerage perspective, but also from a trader's perspective, because it is exactly as you said, an internet connection, a skill set, and anywhere in the world, it's taken advantage of in the sense that people think, oh, it's easy. One of the first things you and I spoke about in our last chat was to say, what is the biggest misconception? Is that this is the easiest path you can take. Nothing worthwhile ever is that easy. If it were, we'd all be doing it. But taking the time to invest in, excuse the pun, yourself, but also in the markets, you then start to realize that the full potential of this thing is far greater than you could have ever imagined. So our ghost producers just told us about Tech Timber. Well, told me about Tech Timber. And I initially would have thought perhaps it's a gentleman named Timber who enjoys tech, but it is not that. And so we have our tech specialist in studio, Mudiwa Gavaza, to take us through Tech Timber, explain what it's all about. Apparently, this is a real thing, folks. Mudiwa, thanks. Lovely to have you back on the show. We've missed you. Sai, did you know about Tech Timber?
No, and I got it wrong. I thought we were talking October, but Timber, of course, is not October. It sucked. I did not.
So it's no one named Timber. It doesn't happen in October, but Mudiwa Kavaza is going to tell us what it's all about. Mudiwa, what's Tech Timber?
So Tech Timber refers to the fact that every single year around September and onwards, but specifically in September, you have a lot of tech announcements, particularly around consumer electronics. And most of the attention tends to be around the new iPhone, because September is known as when Apple is going to be releasing its latest iPhone. So we saw that on the 9th of September, that was the iPhone 17 range. Lots of, you know, stuff said around that. But it also feeds into, you know, that broader third quarter where a lot of guys are trying to push out their tech so that in the fourth quarter, they prep themselves for the fourth quarter as we go into Black Friday and Cyber Monday, as well as just the general holiday season.
December spend, you know, and all of
December
that.
December spend. Mm. So that's why you tend to see a lot of announcements, you know, pre this period. And the iPhone tends to be the one that gets the most headlines.
So let's get into that. Yeah. Two Apple users in studio.
Yes.
I was on my way to being an Apple user and then I had a horrid experience. And so that's not happening. Let's get into the Apple releases. Let's get into what we make of Apple as a company. Yeah. And perhaps let's start with that iPhone. Usually when we get an iPhone release, there's a lot of hype. The share price goes up. Everybody's happy and all of that. I kept an eye on the iPhone 17 release this time around.
Yeah.
I noted two things. Mm. People were less than impressed because it looks no different to anything
it's
else.
It's orange.
Sai, changing the color of a phone doesn't allow you to charge 10,000 Rand more for the phone, which is the second point, is that they're obscenely priced at this point for the value that they offer.
Mine's purple and you wouldn't even know.
What iPhone is that?
14.
Guarantee you similar features to the iPhone 17, and Mudiwa can weigh in on that.
No, so the 17, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, you're not wrong. But the base model is now 256 gig, and they used to get... I don't know, I remember when they gave you a 16 gig iPhone. It was like you take three videos and you got no space.
I was a victim to that.
Yeah. So weirdly, the 17 is actually the best model, unless you really, really care about photography. But frankly, the 17's got a better camera in it than most professional cameras out there. The skinny one is, I think, they're moving to folding. They need a folding device. In order to get folding, you've got to get the skinny working. Battery life is nice. There's some good tech. They're doing liquid cooling now. Because to dissipate the heat, because these things are now basically just batteries. If you look at the thin 17, the tech's in the bulge and the rest of it's basically battery. Mm. But to your point, yeah, not much difference. Mm. That's why I'm on a 14.
The heating thing was a concern, and perhaps you can tell us more about that, Modiwo, is the fact that iPhones were now overheating more than they should be. Hence, I suppose, what Sai mentions around liquid cooling and all of that. What's causing the heating issue? I mean, I'm not an expert here, but we're not seeing similar heating issues from the likes of Samsung at the moment.
Yeah.
And we weren't seeing similar heating issues from when Steve Jobs was at the helm of iPhone. I don't know if Tim's doing something different. I don't know if we should be looking at that. But what's causing the heating?
I've never had an issue with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Previous older models never. Suddenly, we've got a heating issue. Like iPhone is a new manufacturer.
Actually, that is once mine did say to me, "Your phone is hot."
Yes. I've only gotten a heating alert once in my life, but I was in a very hot place. It was 36 degrees outside. But if you look at what's going on right now, there's a lot of things that go into, you know, thermals and all of that stuff. When it comes to the heating. But what's better about the iPhone 17, specifically the 17 Pro and 17 Pro Max, is that I think it's given Apple freedom to do certain things that they wouldn't have done in previous years, right? Up until, let's call it your iPhone, let's call it 10, what some people refer to as the X, right? Apple was famous for what was called Thinnovation. Right, they were trying to drive everything as thin as possible. So if you remember the iPhone 6, the 7, the 8,
everything was right.
Then at some point they decided
after the 4,
right, let's try and expand the phone, keep the same, you know, thin profile. But now you've got an iPhone. I'm trying to think. If you look at the 12, the 13, 14, and 15. Especially on the Pro Max side, they're roughly about the same size. Slightly taller, slightly wider, but, you know, roughly the same size. This is the thickest set of Pro phones that Apple has ever made. And it's allowed them to put the biggest battery that they've ever had in an iPhone and the best cooling that they've ever had in an iPhone. The things that make you...
And camera sensor. They can crack 48 megapixels.
Yes. Right, across all the different sensors, if I remember correctly, right? All three cameras, rather, right? So what makes phones hot is what's called sustained use. So sustained use comes in different ways. One, you can actually just sit there. The best ones, and this is why Apple likes to show it as a benchmark, is watching video. Just sitting and watching video, that's your screen is on the whole time. And your phone is just crunching data. That's heavy on the phone. That's heavy on the battery. Second one is gaming. That's an obvious one. Third one actually is a bit more passive, but people don't realize it. Mobile data, right? Which is why using Wi-Fi and stuff like that is just more efficient. But if you just sit on 5G, sit on 4G, your battery just comes down because it's an antenna that is on all the time.
Constantly communicating with the towers and things.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
And especially for some of the more power-hungry technologies, you know, that's where we find ourselves. So in my head, I support what Simon says. Your 17 is probably your best bet right now in terms of value. That's the best value you're going to get.
Yeah, yeah.
The best selling is likely going to be the Pro Max.
Yeah.
And then the one that's almost a unknown right now is going to be the Air. Because it's a thin profile. Some people see it as a stepping stone to the folding. Others, including myself, also see it as a way that Apple has always been trying by all means to get to this stage where you have a portless iPhone, right? So as far as I'm concerned, right? Because one of the things that they've taken out from the current iPhone Air, right? iPhones, if you play a video, you'll see that You've got a speaker on the left and a speaker on the right. It's on the bottom and it's on the speaker. The iPhone 8 has no speakers on the bottoms.
Yeah.
Right? They've taken away the speakers. That phone is about as thin as the USB-C port on it.
It's also got no SIM.
Yes, and it's also got no SIM card in it, right? So you're taking away all of these, you know, things, and you might find ourselves in a portless situation.
What isn't being taken away is the price tag, because these things, there's just a ridiculous premium. And I'll come back to this because I want to get into some of the other topics, but actually, no, let's do it now. Quick. Yeah. Yes, no.
Yeah.
Does the price tag justify the phone?
Yes.
On the Pro Max, yes. On the 16, I think they can do a little bit more work to...
Yeah, I mean, this is a 14 Pro. I didn't get the Max because I'm always close to charging. I don't need the extra battery. Did it cost me a truckload of money? Yeah. Is it still an epic piece of kit? You betcha.
Would you pay another truckload of money for the 17 to replace that?
Oh, no. No, because this one still works. When this one stops working, I will get whatever the new one is and pay the truckload of money.
Okay, let's move on. Disney launched their ESPN channels, linear ESPN channels that they've already had on multi-choice platforms are now part of the Disney Plus subscription.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Effective the 2nd of October. Yes, Si.
So will I be able to watch the Springboks
ESPN
win
channels
the World Rugby Championship
on your Disney
on
Plus
Saturday on my Disney Plus?
Yes. Now, I bring this up because we've had this debate on the show. I've had this debate with Mudiwa. I've had this debate with you, Si, around streaming platforms. Mm. And you and I spoke about this, Si, when we spoke about, actually, I spoke about it with Mudiwa as well, when we spoke about the fact that MultiChoice's edge was sport.
Yes.
And what do you then do in response to a Disney or a Netflix or whatever now bringing sport into their own platform? Mm. I remember we had this debate, and now it's finally happened.
Yeah,
Finally happened at a time where MultiChoice is going through a massive restructure with the Canal Plus business. Could Disney have picked a better time?
I was about to say, in response to your question directly, how do you respond? If you're Canal Plus, you go and you buy MultiChoice. because it's right now, the tough part is the fact that once upon a time, the likes of SuperSport and MultiChoice could sit in certain bubbles, and you knew that as long as you've got the size and the scale in your region, that was good enough for you to go and have that conversation with the English Premier League, you know, with the IPL, with all of these different, you know, sporting codes. But now you've got, and this is something that the Canal Plus CEO said to me last week. He was like, listen, we've got about 40 million combined customers between Canal Plus and MultiChoice, right? But out there is a Netflix that's close to 300 million. And that's what you're fighting against. It's a threat that wasn't there 10, 20 years ago. Mm. Now you're fighting against Amazon. Amazon has got, I believe, you know, some of the football. Netflix did the football game, the Christmas Day football game. They've been streaming some of the boxing. You've got Apple that's got Major League Soccer. It's got some of the baseball. And then, right, so the non, you know, broadcast guys are bringing the biggest fight now. Even, I believe, at some point Meta and Facebook wanted to get into that, you know, particular realm. Think about how deep those pockets are. Right?
I spoke to the Walt Disney sort of head for the Southern African region, Christine Service, around this. Mm. And my question was quite simple around the fact that as a streaming platform to now kind of come in and compete in this space, is this how they see the future of sport? And it's something that we've spoken about as well, right? Disney has a distinct advantage in that they own ESPN.
Yes.
And we've spoken about this side to say that they went on a deliberate drive to in-house everything that was related to them. They started by removing Marvel off of Netflix and having Marvel content only available through their platform. They were very they've been deliberate in the strategy to say the things we own, you must primarily come and get through us, which makes sense because that's how you increase your revenue, right? From a threat perspective, and I know this because Size said this on many an occasion, that if he could, you'd have a subscription just for sports. When there's no sports, you turn the subscription off, right? Does this then present a better opportunity set for you, Si, to say, I might even keep my Disney Plus subscription beyond
because I've got the full channel. Because I was about to cancel it because I've watched all the Doctor Who's and now I need to go watch The Three Body Problem because I read the book and now I need to see the series, and that's on Netflix. But I did just check. It won't be streaming my rugby on Saturday, so I'm still going to be going to some random bar.
And
but we'll get there, right?
We'll get there.
Because to be clear, SuperSport has a lot of money for the rugby, but I think Disney has more. When the rugby peeps are selling their rights and Disney arrives and they got little SuperSport there and their equivalent in Australia and New Zealand and England, and then you've got Disney or ESPN as the case may be, I think ESPN's got the checkbook.
But the question is more about as much as ESPN wants to compete, how much do they care? Because in the specific territories that ESPN primarily dominates and cares about, your appetite for certain sports is going to be incumbent on that. Because for SuperSport is going to do everything in its power to retain, let's say, your rugby rights.
Yeah.
Because in the Southern Hemisphere, right, they need to make sure that every year you've got great rugby. ESPN, they can do it. But it's not going to be their bread and butter.
Yeah, but ESPN as well has the main things. They've got baseball, they've got basketball and all of that, right? But that's all US, US dominated sports, right? The rest of the world, if you had to ask the rest of the entire world, would you rather watch an NBA game or would you rather watch a rugby game? That split, where it historically may have been, hey, we'll go for NBA, is now going to be skewed more towards things like rugby and football. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for ESPN
and cricket.
And the IPL. And for ESPN to sit back and say, we're going to be a sports channel that only focuses on American-based sports, I think is a poor strategy in a long-term basis. Mm. But they're an American-based company, so they could very well hold that view, right? Mm. The question then becomes is if they then go and expand, like you said, they've got deeper pockets to be able to expand into a market. If they're competing against a SuperSport, for example, and you're competing for broadcasting rights, SuperSport has Canal Plus and that behind them. But at what point does an ESPN or a Disney then start to have a conversation with a Canal Plus and say, unbundle SuperSport, we want that asset. Because it fits in with our business and it might not fit in with your business. But also from Canal Plus's perspective, and I want to get your thoughts on this side, do you then let go of SuperSport because that is your bread and butter?
No, you do not let that go. But there is a flip to it, which is also, and so weirdly, it's not rugby, although it could be. But for example, the Rugby World Cup, they must be having thoughts and conversations around giving a direct streaming app, much like I get with F1. The problem is the contracts, they do that, then SuperSport's going to say, well, we're going to give you less money because Simon's not going to sign up because I can just get, you know, just give me the Rugby World Cup. Boom, 6 weeks, pay a price, etc. But SuperSport's not going to like it. Neither is ESPN if World Rugby does it. And that's the trick.
But World Rugby has no incentive to do that because right now they have enough of the SuperSports and the other players begging to obtain those broadcasting rights. So for them, it's free money to just sit back and almost outsource it to one service provider rather than develop anything in-house, right? Yeah. But from a SuperSport perspective, they've been wanting to expand their offering as well and put on more sports coverage on their side. Mm. That's their strategy.
Yeah.
What happens when that becomes ESPN's strategy?
I was about to say that I think where we can maybe take the lead a little bit from an ESPN point of view is what is the type of deals that Disney, and I'm going to say ESPN in a sense, have struck around IPL.
Okay.
Since that Indian League started in the 2000s, they were actually one of the first broadcast partners that actually came on because it allowed them to expand, you know, into that particular country. So I would say if we're going to take anything as a lead, look at how Disney has moved around cricket. Mm. And I think that's going to inform their strategy when it comes to some of these sports like rugby that are really emerging. When it comes to what SuperSport and MultiChoice is doing, you can almost see that they were kind of reading the tea leaves in a sense when they started offering sport on Showmax late in Showmax 2.0
relaunch that you and I spoke about as well.
But even before the Showmax relaunch, there was Showmax Pro, which offered sport for the first time, you know, on the streaming platform. And we've been seeing them that it's primarily soccer, but every once in a while, if the event is big enough, they'll open it up. What's a bit tough about the way they're doing it is that it's only available on mobile, right? But to the last point around where the strategy goes from now, the indication that we have is that Canal Plus is looking to create some type of a super app of some sort where they bring all of their various streaming properties, you know, together onto one platform. Because Canal Plus already has its own streaming platform.
Yeah.
MultiChoice already operates two, DStv Now and Showmax. So you need to
you have to consolidate
you know, all of this stuff, so that might, you know, show us in future the number of offerings that SuperSport will now be able, you know, to push forward. What I'm really keen to see is, does the SuperSport brand supersede the Canal Plus sporting brand? Because Canal Plus has carried sport like soccer and rugby for a long time in its
brand equity. Yes. Because now you can't come into a market and say to an African market that has relied on a SuperSport brand, hey, SuperSport is dying, go use this platform or whatever
it is. This is the challenge. So basically, I mean, I think there was one country which had neither Canal Plus nor SuperSport. And they're all operating, you know, like in South Africa, we had SuperSport. In Algeria, they had the Canal Plus and all of that. To rebrand to one or the other, but then, I mean, keeping two brands is a painful experience as well.
Okay, so we don't know where the future of sports streaming is going. We have no idea where that's headed, but perhaps there might be some insight, there might be some light at the end of the tunnel. I want to get Mudiwa's thoughts on, what is it called? Tech Temba.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Tech Temba, what's in your tech bag? Going into the rest of the year, what are we looking out for? Black Friday is coming up, Cyber Monday is coming up, the festive period is coming up. Si and I are always on the hunt for really good deals, really good tech buys, things that are useful. We've been able to pick up a couple of useful things over the years. What's in your tech bag?
Personally, I look at if I'm going to really buy something and I really like it, that gap between Christmas and New Year's is personally where I shop.
Why?
Because you're done with the general festive season rush, and a lot of the time your retailers are trying to get rid of stock, and you know, and bring
they
haven't sold it. So you're likely to get some good deals there. I've never been a Black Friday or Cyber Monday shopper.
Really?
Never. Never. Maybe it's the hype, but every year I do my best to just go and see, you know, what's actually going on. Is there anything compelling? Are there actually good deals that I could take advantage of? And, you know, so far I haven't really found anything where I actually sit there and I say, okay, fine, this is for me. And I'm speaking in my personal capacity, understanding the fact that I already have a lot of tech.
Fair enough. I appreciate that proviso to say I already have a lot of tech.
But you're not wrong. So, I mean, I'm thinking back. I've never bought a tech product on Black Friday. The sales, there was an Apple something once, but it was like, oh, the earbuds, which I love. But like they were six, now they were five. It's like, yeah, guys, five. Come on. But I mean, I mean, last year Game had like special and dishwasher tabs. Man, we've used that, not Game Checkers. We used the last ones like last week. It like ran almost back to Black Friday again. But it's the important point is, and I agree with you, the tech side is usually a little lackluster. And I also have a lot of tech.
Okay, so from the two people that have the most tech in South Africa, Black Friday is not a thing for them. But we're going to have to leave Tech Demo on that note. Thanks, Mudiwa, for joining us. We look forward to having you back on the show. We'll keep an eye on some of the other tech updates that we have and see if we can make sense of what's going on out there. We have previously had this on the show under our Investor Insights. We are renaming our Investor Insights because, for some reason, some of the things that we uncover there just don't make sense. So it's now being called Make It Make Sense. We're going to try and make sense of it. But while we are on that topic, as we rethought of that, I couldn't help but realize Make It Make Sense abbreviates to MIMS. And then instantly I went back to 2007 and wondered, this is why I'm hot. Who is Mims? American rapper that I think was really only known for This Is Why I'm Hot. Sai's looking at me because he's very confused, has no idea who I'm talking about. Sai, I don't even know if you've heard the song. I'm sure we can find the song and see if I can play the song for you. But I don't know if this would... And I mean, you've got a broad taste in music, right? So I'm going to play the song. And I expect that you might have heard this.
Oh, yeah. This is old.
This is 2007 old, right?
Yo, that's when I moved to Joburg old.
Right, so only came up because when I thought make it make sense, it worked
make
out
it
to
make sense.
Yeah, it worked out to Mims. And then Mims. This was the only other Mims reference I'd had at the time. So
Mims.
Yeah. I wonder okay. where he is in today's day. No idea. Mm-mm. But in what we're looking at, I want to look at two things primarily. The Capital 40 shenanigans. That's been going around. We've done this before, guys. We've told you on our show, be careful about who you deal with. Do your research on FSPs. All of those sorts of warnings and things we've covered here. I cover them on the radio show. Sai and I talk about it all the time. Capital 40 went around promising unrealistic returns to people and making all sorts of promises to the public around the investment case. They took in a bunch of money.
They use AI to trade.
Yes, they use artificial intelligence to run a trading strategy, and therefore you're going to make X amount of money and all of those. Now, let's be clear. These things are not unknown concepts, right? You can use artificial intelligence. You can build algorithmic trading tools. You can build automated trading robots. That's not the problem. The problem is putting your money with unregulated parties that are not going to be able to be held accountable after the fact.
So first thing I did was go to their website, and I see they got a Regis Business Center office in Budapest. Nice place, Budapest. And I scroll to the bottom, as I always do. Firstly, their copyright is 2023. There is no regulatory data here whatsoever.
Right. And that's why Sai scrolled to the bottom, because
that's where you find it.
We've said this before. In an FSP, or in a business that is regulated, many people might know this, might not know this, but we'll say it again.
Oh, and they have a referral program.
Regulated entities have to put their regulatory information and disclaimers at the bottom of their homepage of their website. It cannot be hidden. It must be in plain sight. That is a regulatory requirement. So anytime you deal with an entity that claims to be regulated but cannot show you that they are regulated, this is what you're going to come out. The FSCA has subsequently issued a warning against Capital 40 for their unrealistic returns and their structure and their business. Unfortunately, it's a little too late because some people...
We need to pause here a second. So you put in money and you get a referral bonus of 13%. I don't know what that is. Time period, 1 year. Okay, you're locked in. Weekly ROI, return on investment, weekly 8%.
32% a month.
Well, no, we've got to compound it, so...
Well, no, I'm just taking the first month. You can compound later. I'm just working...
I can't compound that.
Okay, simple interest, 32% a month over 12 months, or even over 10 months, more than 300% returns in a year.
Yeah,
S&P doesn't do 300% in a year.
ChatGPT for that one.
And for even, the compounding results,
and
yes.
Even ChatGPT is like...
It's taking a while to compute that.
ChatGPT is like, I think this is a scam.
The numbers, simple guys, the numbers
but
don't
the
make sense.
The weird thing is, and this is always one of the other tells, so you get 8% weekly ROI, but if you give them lots of money, you get 9.
Yes.
Like what? Like how?
Well, I could legitimately make the argument that more capital does allow for more
opportunity.
So your
100 bucks grows to 5,470 rand at 8% a week.
100 rand to 5,000 rand.
Five and a half.
Okay, folks. I mean, there's not much more to say around that. Unrealistic returns. If people are still going to go down this road and not going to do their research, this is going to be the end result. We're going to have people losing money. We're going to have monies being frozen by the FSCA when these companies have their licenses suspended. And we're going to have investors not being able to recover their funds. So at this point, I suppose we can do with that information what we will. We will try and see if we can keep giving out the warnings, but there's only so much that can be done. Speaking of Ponzi schemes, Social media influencer Ty Lopez saw this the other day. He was big around the pandemic period, talking about building wealth and all these strategies and all these things, to the extent where he and a couple of friends had said they were going to buy a bunch of Radio Shacks in the United States and a couple of other smaller businesses, turn them around, flip them into some big private equity deal and all of those other glorious promises. He is now being investigated and potentially charged by the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States, to the tune of more than $100 million. Not him directly, but the network of
businesses. So he told peeps that he was going to fix Radio Shack, which had gone bankrupt because no one builds their own radios anymore. No one even knows. When I say wireless, people don't know. Wireless, young man, there's like, what's wireless?
What's wireless?
And people gave him a large amount of money and he bought a Lamborghini instead, apparently. Two of them, perhaps, according to social media.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Textbook any Ponzi scheme we've done. What were those? There were two gentlemen. I'm trying to remember their names.
Ref Wayne was one.
Ah.
He's the one I kept. And Ref Wayne just keeps on coming back.
Well, he's still around. He's still in the space. I was not thinking of him. I was thinking of the two gentlemen that ran the Bitcoin scheme, the two brothers, South African, that then disappeared
Miratrade
to London.
International. Oh, those are other brothers.
The other brothers that disappeared with a
dude,
bunch of
Bitcoin.
Dude,
there's so many scams. You've got to like narrow it down.
Yeah,
there's two brothers who bangled a bunch. Then there was the guy who did the Miratrade International. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a new
one.
Well,
Miratrade International gentleman was allegedly unalived in Brazil, remember?
Yeah, well, yes. And then there's Exodus Gold, front story on MoneyWeb today.
Right.
As well.
That's a new one.
Yeah, yeah. And there have been
Afri Markets also. I saw that in the news. Afri Markets was the business that also was linked to the bank. So they were the ones doing the, I'll tell you now, The deepfakes with a popular celebrity or a popular influential individual, put money with us and all of that. There's a story on News 24 today about a family, a mother and daughter that lost, I think it was upwards of 3 million rand on this Afri Markets thing where someone was convincing them to redeposit monies and all of those sorts of things. I'm just trying to get the... There we go, 3 million rand, over 3 million rand in losses. So, again, make it make sense.
Yeah, and the FSC has withdrawn the FSP license of Afri Markets, but it's always too late because by then, although interestingly, when I go to their website, important update regarding transactional delays and temporary suspension of our license.
Yes, so they've been fighting it in court, right? I've been keeping an eye on this. They've been fighting it in court to release the funds. So part of what the provisional suspension meant was that the FSCA went to look to freeze the funds that are held in the client accounts because that's client funds to protect the clients. That's fine. But again, I mean, an important thing to mention here is the FSCA is only really able to act after someone has reported something going wrong, right? And in most cases, that takes too long to be able to do that. In most cases, these operators have already taken the monies and have left. So Afri Markets has been challenging that in the courts. And it was under the guise of the fact that the license was provisionally suspended, hadn't been withdrawn at that stage. Now I believe it has been withdrawn. I do think they are still pursuing the release of funds in courts. Don't know how far they'll get with that. But we can only avoid these scams if we are educated about them. If we continue to talk about them and we continue to be alert around the scams, that's the way we stop these scams from even coming into the market, right? So the idea is preventing them from even coming into the South African market in the first place.
Yeah, and interestingly, they had their license removed in July 25, but there's an article from February 25 talking around lost money with Afri Markets.
That was in the build up to their license.
And that's just
removed.
Page one of Google, Google search. I mean, right. You don't even need to go particularly far.
Yeah.
In March 25, MoneyWeb, Afri Markets onboards 80 clients daily from fake ads. Mm-hmm.
So the main thing, perhaps I can share this as a bit of, I don't think it's really inside information, but the main thing that we've picked up in terms of the deepfake and the patterns here, right, is the brokerage company that is involved or not involved at this point, speculate whichever way you wish, claims then that they have nothing to do with the deep fakes. They don't know what's happening with the deep fakes, and they don't have any affiliation with the deep fake companies. Interestingly enough, when the deep fake is being run and there is an embedded link for you to sign up, that embedded link signs up a legitimate account to a brokerage. So from a brokerage perspective, and I know this because I've worked at brokerages, you can build referral links that are unique to the referrer. That's why these affiliate programs exist. Yeah. So it should be very easy for brokerages, if there's a referral link that's being used that is linked to a referrer, to figure out who's been putting out the information, right? And if brokerages are really interested in protecting clients, then you should be able to disclose this information upfront. If brokerages are not, and you've created these dummy referral links for the sake of whatever you've done, then you should not be profiting from the ill use or the ill-intended use of those links by these deep fake scams. Because if the money ends up in the brokerage's account and the brokerage doesn't, and the brokerage is not affiliated with the scammers in any way, shape, or form, then, then there's no incentive for the scammers to be scamming people because they don't earn a financial benefit, surely. Only leads us to believe, and this is probably why the FSCA is taking this view as well, that the brokerage itself is benefiting as well, because they are directly from the funds. Be careful out there, folks. It's all we can say.
And just go with,
just go with reputable brokers, right? Go with reputable organizations that are trusted. Do your homework, do your research. There's only so much we can do, but that's where we're going to leave Make It Make Sense for now. This week's unfiltered opinion of the week is something that I'm sure Sai has noticed from his travels. I noticed it from my recent travels, and I thought we'd discuss it. Sai, when you got on the plane to King Shaka International and you arrived, you would have seen...
Oh, jeez.
What did you see?
When you land.
Yeah, what did you see?
So when you land in Cape Town, it's coronation everywhere. Mm. And the Protea diamond people, Browns.
Okay.
No relation.
Okay.
and that to me has always been a little bit weird anyway, because but then you land at King Shaka and it's Hollywood Bets. But isn't like the Hollywood Bets, like the race course is called Hollywood Bets, the July is called Hollywood Bets. Probably everything. The Sharks rugby team is called Hollywood Bets.
It might be sponsored by Hollywood
ban
Bets.
Ban gambling.
Okay. That is a conversation we've spoken about on the show before. Go dig into that episode as well. It is up on our channel, of course. That is not the angle that I was looking at.
What do you see?
So I flew to Europe. Mm-hmm. And as we landed, we flew via Turkish Airlines, via Istanbul into Malta. Mm-hmm. As we landed in Istanbul, I looked around the airport, from the outside of the airport, from inside the plane, all I could see was Turkish airline planes. When I flew to China earlier in the year, we flew through Dubai. As you land in the UAE, all you see at the airport is Emirates planes. In South Africa, and probably because we don't have South African Airways beyond the two or three planes that we have at the moment, you don't see any presence of the national carrier. For me, it spoke to a matter of national pride, right? There's certain things that should be off limits in a country. When someone comes into the country, they should see your national airline. They should see your national roads and all of those. There's a certain...
Don't show them the roads.
Don't show them these roads. Okay. But this is what I'm saying, right? There's a certain level of national pride that needs to exist within certain entities. Most of them, for the most part, would have been state-owned entities. And even beyond that, it speaks to how you then welcome people into your country. It sets the bar. It's the first thing that people see, right? And I'll give you an example of great national pride is Umrasi. Umrasi has single-handedly restored national pride at a sporting level. Nothing against the likes of Hugo Bruce and what they've been doing with Bafana Bafana and everything, but there are more people now that support the Springboks than there have ever been in the history of the Springboks. And that is local, that is international, that is, and that is not just because we keep winning everything. We won't discuss the Argentina game. but this is the thing, right? To be able to rally people behind 15, 30 men over an 80-minute cycle and be able to, you should see, and there's the Afrikaans term for it is gees, right? We speak about the gees that goes into watching a rugby game and watching South African sports. So sport has always united us as a country, and that's a good thing, right? But it sets the benchmark. And that's the kind of benchmark I thought of when I was thinking about South African Airways and thinking about when somebody, the G20 summit is coming up in November, when delegates land at OR Tambo, because be honest, that's where they're going to land. Mm-hmm. They land at OR Tambo International Airport. You should see that this is South Africa. Not the song and dance that we do to welcome people for a summit or whatever it is. That happens at the opening ceremony of the event or whatever. You should land at OR and feel that this airport is a South African airport. It is a big airport. It is an international airport. The same way you feel when you land at other countries' airports.
It's been without water for a day, but we won't go down that one. I hear you, and I don't disagree with you, except for the part that how many tens of billions did Praveen Gordhan and other peeps give SAA, the proviso, and it doesn't need to be, because it's a state-owned enterprise, it doesn't need to be for profit. But it also mustn't be for pillage.
But this is why I say that there needs to be certain things within our country that are off limits, like that.
Yeah. There's also another problem that we have. I mean, you mentioned the guys in the Middle East. You mentioned Turkish Airlines, and they are that spoken hub, right? So you fly from around the world into there, and then you fly out.
Connecting hubs, yes.
We are an end of line, which is, as is Australia, because you don't fly to South Africa. I mean, if you're flying anywhere else, you're flying to Durban.
But
not like you can fly Turkish Airlines and then go anywhere in the world. If you were to do that into Joburg, like you've been going the wrong way for the last 8 hours.
Yes, but I would venture that there is an opportunity in exactly what you're saying, Si. We might be an end of line for the moment, but at the point where South Africa, SAA, was the largest airline carrier on the continent, we weren't an end of line. We were that connecting destination African continent.
Well, and think about Ethiopian Airlines, which is, okay, it's much, you know, it's North Africa, but it's not hub and spoke.
And Ethiopian Airlines came up when? Compared to SAA, last week compared to SAA. but they've done that deliberately to say that that's what they're going to do. There's nothing stopping South Africa from building ourselves as that hub. To link the rest of the world. Africa sits in a unique position. South Africa sits in a unique position. There's nothing stopping us. We can already do long-haul flights to New York. We can already do long-haul flights to Australia, to London.
And once you've landed at OR Tambo, we can send you to Mauritius, to Namibia, to Botswana, to all these awesome places.
Which is your strategic leverage as the national carrier, as SAA, to say, the same way in other countries like Dubai, they are the link to the rest of the world. We can be the link to the African continent as a start and then the link to other places as well.
Yeah. No, look, and I do agree. When we landed OR Tambo to see rows and rows, and there used to be a time. There used to be a time when SAA would have hourly flights between Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, that sort of triangle. And there was just always just, you know, lines and lines of planes. And I never worried about missing a flight, because if I missed it, there would be another one in 55 minutes.
Nobody's saying it is cheap to maintain an airline. I've had this conversation with many airline companies. It's not cheap to do so. But if we had not plundered the resources and we had looked at, I mean, if you look at just the sheer number of, and this is where I'm going to leave it, because the longer I think about it, the more I can't think about it. The sheer number of A380 Airbuses that Emirates has under their fleet when you land at Emirates in Dubai. I'm not talking Etihad, I'm talking just Emirates. And those things are not cheap to maintain, right? South Africa could have built a very impressive airline fleet at this point.
Yeah.
And we should have. And we did have one. What frustrates me is SAA has been this airline in the past. We have been the biggest on the African continent.
Yeah.
Please, can we get national pride back, guys? That's it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors.
sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.